Okay, we're now beginning a new Bible study series. I don't think it'll be a very long series. I'm guessing perhaps as little as 2 weeks. Maybe it might stretch to 3. It's possible more, but I think perhaps not. And we're looking in the next couple of weeks or so to something that we all do. And therefore it's definitely relevant to us, whether we are young, middle-aged, or of advanced years, and we're looking at the topic of speech, how we speak, the words that we choose, because it's possible that this is more important in our lives than we think. Now, if you consider, there are no other creatures on the earth other than mankind and womankind who speaks. You know, there are some animals who communicate to each other. I believe dolphins and whales, I think chimpanzees and so on. They can chirp or beep or cluck or quack and communicate certain things like warnings and perhaps, you know, mating calls and so on. But that's not speech. That's not conversation. That's not passing on truths, discussing your inner feelings, planning. That's not speech as you and I know it. So there is no other creature, no other creation on the earth that speaks other than human beings. Now, of course, God speaks. The Bible is the word of God. It's the written version of what he has said. And many, many times throughout the Bible, we'll read things like, "Thus saith the Lord," and "God spoke, saying." So God speaks. In fact, the first couple of 3 verses of the Bible, God said, "Let there be light." So we find God speaking from the very opening of the Bible. God speaks throughout the scriptures. And if we think about it, speech, the ability to communicate in words, is a godly characteristic. So our tongues, our ability to speak, is something we share with our God and Father. It's really a divine gift. And obviously, if God gives us something that is shared with him, and if he then writes many, many, many instructions in his Bible about how we use that gift of speaking, we really ought to be very careful, thoughtful about how we speak, when we speak, where we speak, what we say, how we say it. It's a divine gift. And the gift of speech can be used for good. I think we'll know that, and we'll probably cover some of these points in the next week or two. It can be used for good, to build up. You can use your words to encourage, to inspire people, to motivate. You've heard great speakers, I'm sure. Sometimes perhaps in the church, otherwise perhaps you've heard them on TV. Perhaps you've been to conferences or meetings and you've heard somebody who's got a tremendous gift of speech. They can inspire. They can motivate. They can lift your spirits. And of course, we also know that speech can be used to hurt, to discourage people, to wound people, to alienate people, to destroy people. So words themselves are, in a sense, fairly innocuous. They're just, you find them all in a dictionary, but when we start to speak them, we can build up, we can destroy, we can add value, we can take it away. And so I want to take the next couple of weeks to look more closely at what the Bible has to say about this gift that God has given us, and to see what lessons we can learn, or if we know the lessons already, then perhaps they'll just be reminders. But you know, I think there's a danger that we take our tongues for granted. We just flap them and use them willy-nilly without any real thought as to whether we should be talking at all, or if we are, what we should be saying. And I think we all need to become much more aware and conscious of our tongues, and of course our mouths, and the words that we're using. So today we're going to look at a bit of background, but probably the key predominant scriptures today will be about the need to be aware of our tongues, and especially to think first before we open our mouths to think first. We want to engage our brains, you've heard that before we open our mouths. Many of us have got a Mach 5 tongue and perhaps a Ford T model brain, and that's not quite going to work. We need to think carefully, ponder before we speak. Now, our words are important. Let's look at a scripture we've been to fairly recently in Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12, and of course we were speaking recently in our faith series about the heart and mouth connection, and of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaks. And in fact, this is mentioned in this particular passage, but we're going to go right to the end of the passage, Matthew 12, and picking up in verse 35. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil things. And he does that, of course, by speaking. But I say to you, says Jesus, that for every idle word men may speak, and women, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. Now that makes it fairly serious, because if we believe Jesus, and with no reason not to, he says that for every idle word, every unprofitable word, we will give account of it in the day of judgment. Idle word is otherwise translated in some translations ineffective word or useless word. So if you and I are engaged in commonly speaking idle words, useless words, unprofitable words, empty words, thoughtless words, careless words, then we need to realize there's a judgment coming. And verse 37, just in case we missed that, for by your words you'll be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. So I suppose a good question is, how are we doing? How am I doing? How are you doing? If our words are being recorded and were played back to us in a sort of a judgment scenario, would we be happy enough with those words? Would they be upbuilding words, positive words, helpful words, kind words, courteous words? Or would they be words of complaining, griping, murmuring, criticizing? Well, it says here, verse 37, by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. And so are words important? Well, if we believe Jesus, then they are, because he says here that every idle, useless, ineffective, careless word that we speak, we'll have to give account of it, and our words will be part of our judgment. So therefore it makes sense, I would say, that we pay attention to our words, pay attention to how we speak, pay attention to what we say, and not be on some sort of an autopilot that just blabs willy-nilly without thinking. Engage our brains before we start opening our mouth. Let's go down to Proverbs chapter 18. And sometimes we say things like, well, I didn't really mean that. But that would be idle words, wouldn't it? If we didn't really mean it, then why did we say it? We don't want to be too casual with our words to the point where we say things and then decide afterwards, well, I didn't really mean that. Well, in that case, if we'd engaged our brains first, we probably wouldn't have said it. And if we said it and it's idle words, then Jesus has told us what may happen. Let's turn to Proverbs 18, and we get down to verse 21. Proverbs 18:21. The tongue's not important. The tongue is irrelevant. We haven't got to worry about how we speak, because after all, words are fairly empty, and who cares? Well, the scripture tells us otherwise. Verse 21, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. So the tongue, how we use it, is a matter, it says here, of life and death, or death and life as it's phrased. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Now it would be, I suppose, some exceptional physical circumstances. You can imagine where some judge says, you know, death penalty, using his words. This is talking much more generally about our lives. The tongue is perhaps a lot more important than you and I might tend to think. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. You can build people up, you can tear people down, just by the way you use your tongue, or even sometimes just the way you tone your voice. As many a child has been sort of ruined in early childhood by a parent that's just talked down to it. You're no good. You look out to nothing. You're a waste of space. You take after your father, etc. And, you know, child picks that up, believes what is said, and their lives are directed thereafter by the scathing words that they heard. There's been reports of children at school where a teacher says something like, "Well, you really are bright, little Johnny. You've got an amazingly fast mind. You'll go far in life." And lo and behold, the child believes it, is encouraged, is motivated, is inspired, and years later, the child's doing extremely well, thanks to positive building words that were presented to it. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. So we have to be careful not to use just casual, empty words, because unknown to us, and we don't always pay attention to what we're saying, but the scripture says that our tongue, life and death, is connected to it. If you were carrying a weapon on your person, like a gun, you'd be fairly careful about how you carried that weapon and how you used that weapon. You wouldn't just take it out and probably toss it across the room onto the sofa. You'd think, "Ah, this is a dangerous weapon. This weapon can cause death. It's a matter of life and death that I use this weapon properly." So you keep it properly guarded, you keep it away from children, you wouldn't just toss it around, you'd make sure it was secure when you laid it down, you wouldn't just point it in any old direction, because it's a dangerous weapon. Also is a tongue. The tongue has the power of life and death, and it can be equally as dangerous a weapon in the wrong hands, so to speak, as a gun. In fact, in some places it's referred to as an arrow or as a razor blade in scripture. We'll get to that perhaps next week. So let's start being more aware that our tongues are important and what we say is important. There are more instructions in the Bible about how to use the tongue, when to use it, where to use it, what to say, than any other faculty of the human body. The tongue, using it, and it's critical to our spiritual growth, to our overcoming, to our preparation for God's kingdom, that we learn to guard and use our tongues properly. Let's turn to James chapter 3. James and chapter 3. Beginning verse 1, read all the way down to verse 12 here. James chapter 3, and beginning in verse 1. "My brethren, let not many of you become teachers, knowing that we shall receive a stricter judgment." Just a warning there about, you know, people who want to become, you know, teachers and spiritual leaders. It's a good thing to be, but people ought to be very careful about rushing in, because those who wish to become teachers and hence influence other people will be judged more strictly, because it's in one sense okay if you lead yourself astray, you pay a penalty for that, but if you lead 50 people astray, 500 people astray, then God says, well, now hold on a moment. You wanted to be a teacher and a leader and a guide, and that's fine, but you have caused many, many to lose their way. So it's just a warning there from James not to rush into that particular area. Verse 2, for we all stumble in many things. If anyone does not stumble in word, he is a perfect man or a mature man, able also to bridle the whole body. If we don't stumble in word, if we don't stumble in our speaking. And this is what James will talk about for the next few verses. He concentrates, quite a strong passage really. The next few verses, they are quite strong and quite helpful. But he's talking about a mature man, a perfect man or woman, is somebody that doesn't stumble in their speaking. And if they can control their words, you know, when to speak and to whom to speak and what to say, if they can do that, then they are perfect or mature. They can bridle the whole body if you can control your tongue. Verse 3, indeed, said James, we put bits in horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn their whole body. By controlling a horse's mouth, you control his body. You put the bit in, and if you, you know, pull to the right, the horse will go to the right and pull to the left. And I'm speaking in theory here. I've only been on a horse once, and it was a long time ago. I've forgotten quite. I think it did more or less what it wanted anyway. It probably realized there was a novice on its back. But generally speaking, you put a bit into the horse's mouth, you put pressure on his mouth and his tongue, and this big, huge, heavy horse goes where his mouth is pointed. Control the mouth, control the horse. Even though the mouth is only a little part of a horse, the big body follows. Or verse 4, look at ships. Although they are so large and are driven by fierce winds and those days of sails, they are turned by a very small rudder wherever the pilot or the captain desires. And we know that's true. You can have a big vessel, even a big oil tanker, and a rudder, fairly small by comparison. You just turn it, and the ship, huge ship, turns around. Even so, verse 5, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. Again, a little rudder, a little bit in the horse's mouth, a little fire in the forest. And we've all seen pictures on TV and so on of perhaps somebody's carelessly thrown a lighted cigarette out of a car window as they zoomed, you know, through the forest, you know, perhaps in a dry summer. And from that small lighted cigarette, suddenly, a few days later, you've lost thousands of acres of forest. Many animals have died. Perhaps people with luxury homes there have lost them. They're all ash, and they've escaped with only their lives and perhaps a few possessions from a small fire. And what James is saying is the tongue is very small, but it has a massive impact far beyond what we might think. Just like you can guide a big horse with a little bit in its mouth, you can change the direction of a huge vessel by a small rudder. The tongue is ever so small. Ever so small. But verse 6 says, the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature and is set on fire by hell. Some quite interesting allusions in there, but I think we get the basic point. The tongue can be dangerous. The tongue has got to be bridled. You and I have got to be careful how we use the tongue. Because it says it's a fire, a world of iniquity. It defiles the whole body, sets on fire the course of nature, is set on fire by hell. I've got a translation here that makes it a bit more easy to understand. This is the Phillips New Testament translation. It says here, verse 5 and 6, in the Message translation, first of all, then the Phillips. The Message says, verses 5 and 6, a word out of your mouth may seem of no account, but it can accomplish nearly anything or destroy it. It only takes a spark, remember, to set off a forest fire. Verse 6. A careless or wrongly placed word out of your mouth can do that. By our speech, we can ruin the world, turn harmony to chaos, throw mud on a reputation, send the whole world up in smoke, and go up in smoke with it, smoke right from the pit of hell. So I think we get the gist. The tongue can do a lot of damage. The J.B. Phillips, picking up in verses 2 through 6, we all make mistakes in all kinds of ways, but the man who can claim that he never says the wrong thing can consider himself perfect, for if he can control his tongue, he can control every other part of his personality. Men control the movement of a large animal like a horse with a tiny bit placed in his mouth. Ships too, for all their size and the momentum they have, with a strong wind behind them, are controlled by a very small rudder according to the course chosen by the helmsman. And then verses 5 and 6, the human tongue is physically small, but what tremendous effects it can boast of. A whole forest can be set ablaze by a tiny spark of fire, and the tongue is as dangerous as any fire, with vast potentialities for evil. It can poison the whole body. It can make the whole of life a blazing hell. So I think we get the idea. Our tongues, how we use them, is very, very important. And if we can control our tongues, we are mature, virtually perfect. Dropping down to verse 7, for every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison. So mankind can tame big elephants and giraffes and creatures like that. The whales, the killer whales, you know, at SeaWorld. But can any man tame the tongue? Well, we're talking unconverted men here, of course. No unconverted man can control the tongue, or unconverted woman. Obviously, you and I have a different spirit, so we should be able to do that. We have God's Spirit in us. That gives us the power to do these things. Verse 9, James says, with it, our tongues are speaking, with it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God. Out of the same mouth proceed blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not to be so. You know, James is getting a little bit agitated here that here are Christians walking God's way, and with the same tongue, the gift of speech, which is a divine gift really, out of the same mouth we praise God on the one hand and we condemn, damn, and are rude and, you know, about our husbands, wives, kids, neighbors, other church members. He's saying that can't be right. You can't have the mouth speaking, you know, blessings and cursings. It's just not right. He says, verse 11, does a spring send forth fresh water and bitter from the same opening? Well, you know, that doesn't happen. Verse 12, can a fig tree, my brethren, bear olives? Does a grapevine bear figs? Thus, no spring can yield both salt water and fresh. If it's a spring of pure water, that's where it comes out of it. It doesn't change overnight to deliver salt water and then go back again. So he's saying, how come you're using your tongues this way? How can you be positive with your tongues on the one hand and the negative, cursing, murmuring, griping, complaining, bitching on the other hand? How does it happen? He says that's not the way it works. And James expects us to be using the spirit that God gave us to control our tongues. Because remember, every idle word and death and life in the power of the tongue, and we must control our tongues. Look at James chapter 1 whilst we're here. And we'll just jump into verse 26. James 1:26. If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, His tongue doesn't control his tongue, doesn't control his speaking, but deceives his own heart. This one's religion is useless. See, God expects, it's easy for us to sort of be very spiritual, you know, always talking about the world, the tomorrow, and so on. But, you know, the way we speak, we do that every day. Most of us speak every day at some point, to friends, to neighbors, to family, to ourselves, to God in prayer. So speaking is not something that is done like only in Sabbaths. It's not something that happens only on rare occasions, on annual holidays. Speaking, we're always speaking. So it's something that we can practice. We can practice to speak right, all the time. Or we can be totally careless and mindless and just blurt out whatever's in our minds. It says here, if anyone among you thinks he's religious, I'm super spiritual, and doesn't bridle his tongue, he's deceiving himself, and his religion is really quite pointless. Because in an area that he can work on day by day, day by day, day by day, he's paying no attention, she's paying no attention. And it says bridle the tongue would like to race off like a fire and burn a forest down, but we can bridle our tongues. We can put bits in them. We can control our tongues. I'll read that verse in the J.B. Phillips. If anyone appears to be religious but cannot control his tongue, he deceives himself, and we may be sure that his religion is useless. If he cannot control his tongue, you know, a man or a woman of God can control their tongue. They can check it. The word to bridle there in the Greek has the meanings of to control, to restrain, to hold in, to check. All fairly straightforward. But of course, if our tongues themselves were perfect, you wouldn't need to do that. But, you know, we're in a carnal world. We grow up sometimes with quite bad speech habits. We're not talking here of just necessarily, you know, four-letter words and swearing. That's obviously not very good, but hopefully not too many of God's people have a problem with swearing. But we're talking about the actual words we use. And of course, the key, in a sense, is we have to think first. If you're going to control or bridle your tongue, you have to stop long enough to think before you speak. If you just blurt and blab, instant reaction to a scenario, then there's a fair chance, depending on our level of conversion, that what comes out might not be something we want to be meeting again in the judgment. Idle, careless, loose, unpleasant, discourteous, rude, crude. Those are things that don't belong in the God family. But if we pause and think before we speak, then we can try to reduce greatly, or ideally eliminate, all these types of expressions and sayings and words and views and opinions that are just not godly. Let's turn to Psalms chapter 34. This is a fairly good test of our conversion. Can we control our tongues? Do we want to? Or is it not applied to us? Well, somebody else has a problem with their tongues, but because I am perfect, I don't need to control my tongue. I've always been a person of, you know, kindness and courteousness. Well, there's more to it than that, of course, and there's a lot of scriptures on speaking and the words we choose. But today we're doing, as I say, largely a sort of background, hopefully just to, if you like, set the scene that our words are very important, and that we should be careful to think first. Picking up Psalms 34 and beginning in verse 12. Who is the man, obviously person, includes women, who is the man who desires life and loves many days that he may see good? Now, do you fall in that category? Well, I imagine so. I think that's pretty much where most of us would be. We desire life. You know, real living, not just a long, miserable life of unhealthiness and sickness and poverty and all the rest of it, but life. real life we desire to live, and loves many days that he may see good. Is that you? Well, it's certainly me. I'll hold my hand up and say, yeah, I desire life. I do desire life. I desire and would love to have many days and see many, many good things and enjoy many good things. That's me, for sure. And then the psalmist, you know, gives the answer as to how that will happen. Verse 13, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking guile or deceit. Well, that was interesting, isn't it? Who desires life and wants to have many good days? Well, number one, keep your tongue from evil. Because we just read in James, if you can control your tongue, you can control your whole body. And keep your lips from speaking guile or deceit. Depart from evil and do good. Seek peace and pursue it. The New Living Testament, also the NET Bible, says, make sure you don't speak evil words or use deceptive speech. So it's not just a question of, you know, crass and crudeness. We're talking here about the actual words that we speak, our conversation, what we do with our tongues. If we keep our tongues from evil, that would include talebearing. That would be including saying things contrary to God's word. God says, you know, bless us, and we say we're going under. We're speaking contrary to the word of God. So our conversation, our the words we use, the speech we use, it should be upbuilding, positive, in good times, in bad times. When we're under pressure, well, of course, that's when very often what's in our heart comes out. Of the abundance of the heart, the mouth leaks. Sometimes when the pressure's on, suddenly the words aren't quite religious any longer. And suddenly you hear things that you wouldn't expect to hear and God wouldn't expect or want to hear. But if our hearts are right, then of course what comes out of our mouths in good times and bad times and under pressure will be uniformly good words. It says here, keep your tongue from evil and your lips from speaking guile or from deceptive speech. It says here, you know, keep your tongue. The Hebrew is the meaning of guard or watch over your tongue. Well, who's going to do that? Well, you are. I am. Guard your tongue. Well, how do you do that? Well, you obviously you watch what you say. You think first. You don't just blab and then try and apologize afterwards and take it all back, which is probably better than not apologizing at all. But clearly the far better way is to guard your mouth. Keep, guard, watch over your tongue. Think first and then say. Don't say and then think afterwards, oops, that wasn't so sharp, was it? How do I take that back now? How do I unscramble that egg? So we keep our tongue from evil. I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I'd come across a book, which I've not bought, and I've decided not to buy it because I think it's a bit too Jewish for my appetite. But there's a sort of a rabbi, I guess he was, living in the 1800s, whose nickname was the Chofetz Chaim. That's in our sort of letters, Chofetz, Chofetz Chaim, Chaim, Chofetz Chaim. And he's written a big book about the laws of speech. And it's probably a perfectly okay book, but I've found a few pages on the internet, and he does tend to quote rabbis probably as much as he quotes the Bible, so not entirely what I'd want to read. But his point he's making is a very good point, which is that there are more instructions in the Bible about how to use our tongues than any other part of our bodies. The Bible is littered, if that's the right word, or full, of instructions, guidelines, and, as he puts it, laws of speech. Laws of speaking. And I guess if God pronounces them, then they are laws of speaking. And it's absolutely everywhere. He's written, I believe, volumes about the laws of right speaking. As I say, unfortunately, for my taste, he probably quotes as many learned rabbis as he does the scriptures, but I believe he does quote numerous scriptures all dealing with the laws of right speaking. the laws of using the tongue. And his point, I think, is very well made. Interestingly, it says here in verse 12, who is the one who desires life? In Hebrew, the little phrase desires life is Chofetz Chaim. That's where he took his name from. And I believe verses 12 and 13 here are his key passage. Who is the man who Chofetz Chaim, who desires life? Keep or guard your tongue from evil. So his big book or books are all about guarding the tongue. The laws in scripture about guarding the tongue. And this verse here, 12, 13, 14, who is the man who desires life? Keep your tongue, guard your tongue, keep and guard your lips from speaking guile. That's a key. If we want to have a long, enjoyable life, one of the first places to look at is, how do we speak? We turn to 1 Peter chapter 3. 1 Peter and chapter 3, it's reinforced because Peter uses that very self-same passage there in the Psalms. And if we believe that God inspired the Old and New Testaments, and if he's inspired this yet again in the writings of Peter, then we can take it as being, you know, fairly important. 1 Peter chapter 3, beginning in verse 8. Finally, all of you, be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tender-hearted, be courteous. And to be courteous would largely be in the way that we speak to other people. There's the two underlying Greek texts, the one that underlies the King James Version and the New King James Version. The word is courteous. In the Greek it means friendly-minded or kind. In other Greek texts that some of the more modern translation use, it comes across as humble, in a sense that sort of is okay, but I guess the better Greek texts say courteous, kind. And we do that very often in the way that we relate in our words to one another. But carrying on to verse 9, not returning evil for evil, or reviling for reviling, or insult for insult. So it's talking really about what you do here if somebody insults you. Oh boy, they shouldn't have done that with me. They're going to learn a lesson. They are. Wait till I give them a piece of my mind. Well, natural, human, and of course not God's way. It says here, don't return evil for evil, and the context is going to be about being courteous and so on, or reviling for reviling. They'll learn their lesson. Trying me on for size, are they? Whew. They don't know what they're doing. By the time I'm finished, they'll be jelly. Well, time they're jelly, you're finished. Because every idle, unproductive, unprofitable word we speak, and so on, it says they're on the contrary, blessing. So if they insult us, we don't give them back as good as they gave us, and more besides. But on the contrary, blessing. Knowing that you were called to this, that you may inherit a blessing. We all want to inherit a blessing. Well, we've got to bless that we be blessed. For, says Peter, and here we recognize this, he who would love life and see good days, let him refrain his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking guile or deceit. Same as Psalms 34. It is Psalms 34 that's been quoted. Let him turn away from evil and do good. Let him seek peace and pursue it. Thinking really in terms of the words we use. For the eyes of the Eternal, or the Lord, are on the righteous. And it's talking really of, again, the words that we select and choose. His ears are open to their prayers, but the face of the Lord is against those who do evil, in the context of their words. Now, you and I want our prayers to be heard. We want God's ears to be open. Then let's do what God says. Let's do what the psalmist says, what Peter says. That's the key in a sense. If you and I want length of days, a long life, blessings, let us refrain or guard our tongue from speaking evil. It's a key teaching. We have to be careful what we say. Careful when we say it. Careful how we say it. In fact, be careful even if we should say it at all. Some things are best left unsaid. And just because something is true, doesn't mean it has to be broadcast, does it? So we all need to be very aware of our words and think before we speak. Think before we speak. Don't come to realize after we've spoken that, oops, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Oh, fine. But let's think that through first. Proverbs chapter 15. Of course, Proverbs is full of laws of speaking. And that probably is a good way to look at it. After all, God speaks. It's a divine gift. And it's not a surprise that God in his textbook would give instructions about how to use the divine gift of speaking. Proverbs chapter 15 and verse, where are we, 28. The heart of the righteous studies how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil. So a righteous person, a righteous man, or a righteous woman, it says, studies how to answer. Studies meaning what? They just bark the first thing that comes into your mind? No, the mouth of the wicked pours forth evil like a sewer, almost. But the heart of the righteous, the mind of the righteous, studies. Ponders is the way it comes across in some translations. The Hebrew actually meditates. Takes time, doesn't it? You can't ponder, meditate, or study in a millisecond. Somebody says something to you that perhaps you don't like to hear, or perhaps is upsetting, or might be asking for information. Well, the heart of the righteous thinks first, studies how to answer. Should I answer at all? Should I be silent here? Should I speak it this way? Should I say it that way? What should I say? How should I say it? The heart of the righteous studies, ponders, meditates, or in other words, thinks first. But, you know, the fool just blasts away, pours it all out, and that's not wise. A wise person doesn't just pour out what they feel, all of it, and then do it 3 or 4 times over for luck. A wise person, let's be careful what we say here and how we say it, and thinks. So Proverbs chapter 16. Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 23. It's a similar thought, phrased a little bit differently. The heart of the wise teaches his mouth and adds learning to his lips. So the heart, you know, the thinking part, it teaches our mouths what to say. We don't blast with the mouth first. So our heart of the wise ponders, studies, reflects, and then, if you like, teaches his mouth what to say. The Good News Bible has this way: intelligent people, of course that's us, intelligent people think before they speak. What they say is then more persuasive because we've thought it through. We're bridling our tongue. If it's a hostile comment that's barbed made our way, we're careful not to return evil for evil or reviling for reviling or blast out with a carnal reaction. But the heart of the wise ponders, studies, teaches his mouth, and adds learning to the lips, makes it easy for the other person to understand. And there's many, many, many specific instructions, some of which will come to sort of next week, but today the key thing really is becoming aware of how important our words are, and in particular the need for us to ponder or think before. We're in Proverbs. Let's turn to Proverbs chapter 10. Of course, many of us like the sound of our own voices. And there's nothing, of course, wrong with good conversation. It's a gift from God. Like I say, animals don't really have long conversations about the past, the present, the future, and the world tomorrow. They can bark, chirp, tweet, whatever, about this food over here or the danger, start running. But the gift of speech and good conversation, it's godly. And building up, adding value, inspiring, comforting, great. But, of course, the danger is that equally, not only the power of life, but the power of death is in the tongue. And so, caution at times. Proverbs chapter 10, we're looking at verse 19. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. But he who restrains his lips is wise. He who restrains his lips. There are times when it's better to be very careful, very restrained. Don't just blast out, you know, endlessly all the inner feelings you've got and start to disparage, run down, murmur, gripe, complain, drag other people down to your own miserable state. In the multitude of words, sin is not lacking. So be careful. If we want to wax eloquent about something, be careful. Be careful. Think. He who restrains his lips is wise. There's a time to be, let's say, prudent and careful and select our words very carefully. Because, verse 20, the tongue of the righteous is choice silver. You know, a righteous person, you know, their words, just like the very best quality silver, valuable, precious, excellent, beautiful. And the heart of the wicked, it says, is worth little. Verse 19 there, in the Revised Standard Version says, the prudent are restrained in speech. The prudent person is restrained. They're careful. They select what they're going to say. Now, in general conversation, it's fine just to, you know, talk, converse, you know, have a good time, laugh, joke. But obviously there are times when we have to think, now, is this moving into an area that perhaps is not wise? Is the conversation veering off in a direction that's not godly? Am I being put under pressure here and tempted to sort of start to blurt forth everything I think in great colourful detail with exclamation marks? Well, the prudent are restrained in their speech. And sometimes that seems hard to us. We can't wait to give people a piece of our mind. It's carnal to react. And of course, a godly person doesn't just react. They study how to answer. Proverbs chapter 17. And verse 27 and 28. Proverbs 17, beginning in verse 27, reading through verse 28. He who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit. Even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. When he shuts his lips, he is considered perceptive. Talking here about, you know, just speaking out, blabbing away. It says even a fool, if he's quiet and says only a few words, he'll be taken to be quite wise. And he with knowledge, verse 27, spares his words. The Hebrew means to keep in check or to restrain or to hold back. He who has knowledge, he's a wise person, holds back, restrains, checks his words. A man of understanding is of a calm spirit. Hebrew also means an excellent spirit or cool spirit. A cool spirit. So if you've got a cool spirit, then you're not hot-tempered, are you? You're not going to be rash and start blasting forth your opinion and this, that, and the next thing. Because if you've got knowledge and understanding, then you'll spare your words. They'll be carefully selected, carefully chosen, of good value. Positive, reflect the mind of a godly person, and you'll be of a calm spirit, a cool spirit, not hot tempered, not rash. And it says, you know, even a fool looks wise if they're cautious with their words, but that much more so a wise person, because that's what a wise person does do. They're careful what they say. Psalms 39. Psalms 39 and verse 1. This is a psalm of David at a particular time in his life when he clearly had some sort of problems around him and his enemies were after him, and he recognized he had to be careful what he said. Verse 1. I said, I will guard my ways lest I sin with my tongue. I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle while the wicked are before me. So David knew that it was right and wise at this particular time in his life to restrain his mouth with a muzzle, or the King James Version says with a bridle. Takes us back to what, you know, James was saying, bridle your tongue, control your tongue, guard your tongue, as Psalm 34 tells us. And that's important. And you can choose to do it. But if we're not aware of our tongues, not aware of how our words can cut and wound or build up and edify and encourage, if we just talk thoughtlessly without thinking about, what am I saying here and why am I saying this and is it right and proper? And so King David was a wise man, and he said, I'll guard my ways lest I sin with my tongue. I will restrain my mouth with a muzzle or a bridle while the wicked are before me. It would be not right in that circumstance, at that time in his life, to have talked. He said some things perhaps he felt like saying. It tells us later on in the psalm he was burning to say certain things, but that wasn't the time and place. And of course, the insight there is equally good for us. There are times when it's wise to hold your tongue. You may be burning to let forth, but there may be a time to do that. But there's many times when, okay, I'm just going to muzzle my mouth and say nothing. Back to James chapter 1. Remember, James said that any man that can control his tongue is a perfect man. The scriptures give us plenty of instruction and guidance, and if there's a law speaking through the scriptures that we can learn and apply, and the things that we've done wrong in the past we can bit by bit eradicate and become better at how we speak and when we speak and what we say and who we say it to and so on, then we become much more like the perfect man that James was referring to. So James chapter 1 and verses 19 and 20. Verse 19, therefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath, for the wrath of man does not produce the righteousness of God. It says you must be slow to speak. It doesn't mean be a slow speaker, dragging it out, one word every 30 seconds, putting people to sleep. You can be a fast speaker, but you mustn't speak before it's time to speak. Be slow to speak, because remember, the righteous man studies how to answer. And if you're fast off the mark, and the other person's still talking, and while they're talking, you're busy getting your thoughts ready to sort of dart in at the first opportunity. And in fact, if necessary, you're going to talk right up and drown them out while you dump your opinion on them. Well, that's not being slow to speak, that's being rather fast to speak. But it says here, be swift to hear. Listen. Listen and hear. Not just listen. Hear is to actually, understand. Pay attention. Not something men are particularly good at with their wives. Many complain in that direction. You're not listening to me. Well, yes, I guess that does occur from time to time. But we have to hear. Be ready to hear. To listen and to understand what's being said. And then ponder. Meditate. Reflect, study before speaking, and especially before, as it says here, slow to wrath. or I guess in America that'd be wrath. But if you're slow to speak and slow to get into anger, because the wrath or anger of man does not produce, well, we know that. So be slow to speak. We all hear about, you know, count to 10. Well, maybe better to count to 100 before blasting forth. By the time we get to 100, maybe we just calm down, cool down, and thought it through. Maybe this is not the time to say this. Maybe at the moment I'm just too upset. Maybe I'm just too agitated. Maybe I'm actually, you know, hostile and angry. Maybe I'm bitter. Maybe this is not the time to just, you know, bring it all out and dump it on this person or those people. Maybe I need to go away and ponder it further. Count to 1,000. Go and maybe pray about it. And then speak, if necessary. Psalms 141. So again, the key thing here is be aware and think first. Now give ourselves time before we talk. And we do talk, of course. We don't just wait and then blast out anyway. The idea is to think how to answer. Studies how to answer. What is the right thing to do? Might be say nothing. You know, silence is sometimes a good thing. Psalms 141 and verse 3. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep watch over the door of my lips. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. And so, as the psalmist said in Psalms 34, keep our tongue, guard our tongue, guard our mouth, keep a watch over it. In other words, be very, very aware, be very, very conscious. You know, if death and life are in the power of the tongue, in a whole host of ways, some of which we'll cover next week, then we need to be very, 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 very aware of what we're saying. And that doesn't mean we say nothing at all anytime. Be great if there's complete silence. That's not quite the idea. We can talk about a million things happily and enjoyably, but you know the areas where we get into trouble, tale-bearing and gossip and murmuring and griping and complaining and how bad done to we are and the world those are living and da-da-da-da-da. Whinge, whinge, whinge. Negative, negative, negative. Bitch, bitch, bitch. That's not what you expect from a prudent or wise person who bridles his tongue, especially in situations of pressure, because out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth leaks. That's not exactly what the Bible says, but that's what sometimes we see. You can be all very religious and sanctimonious until the pressure's on, suddenly out comes all the negative words and the complaints and sometimes even the bad language, because under pressure our degree of conversion or lack of it becomes often much more evident. But it says here, set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. Keep a watch over the door of my lips. Back to Psalms 19. And verse 14, another example of the heart and mouth connection. Psalms 19 and verse 14, we see, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. It's quite, you know, quite a pleasant little proverb to live by. But let the words of my mouth be acceptable in your sight, my great God and redeemer. Well, that's fine, that's absolutely right, and that's where it should be. Of course, we've got to be thinking right for that to happen. Our meditation, what we think, the abundance in our heart, of course, is what will lead to what we speak out of our mouths. And so what we think, how we're thinking, and even the very words we choose to express ourselves, it says here, may they be acceptable in your sight, God. Now, that's what we should be aiming for, that our words are acceptable in God's sight, that the way we use the gift of speaking, that God commends us for it, that we won't be facing a judgment about numerous idle, unproductive, unprofitable words, negative words, complaining words that will be known in heaven among the angels as there go those gripers again, you know. And our prayers aren't just a list of today's gripes. Oh God, this has gone wrong. Oh God, that's gone wrong. Oh God, why won't you do this? Why won't you do that? How long, God, before you do this? Grumble, grumble, grumble. If only God, da-da-da-da-da. You know, 30 minutes. Well, I'm not sure how many people do pray for 30 minutes, but that was always the old teaching from the Church of God of yesteryear, about half an hour a day. But whether it's 30 minutes a day, or whether maybe you're a 3-minute a day person, but whatever it is, if it's just made up of grumble, 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 complain, 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 why this and why not that, then would those words of our mouths be quality words that God says, oh, fantastic, here comes so-and-so again for their prayer time today, I'm looking forward to hearing from him today. Or, oh no, here comes old misery today, what's today's grumbles going to be? You know, they live in a land of plenty and enjoy a lifestyle that even pharaohs couldn't have hoped to enjoy, and it's going to be just 30 minutes or 5 minutes, whatever, of whinging and grumbling. Well, when we're praying, we're using words, and the words we're using to God should be words that are certainly quality words, words which are positive and encouraging, and lots of words of gratitude, and so on. But the key thing again here is, let the words of our mouths be acceptable in God's sight. And you can't do that if we just react thoughtlessly to situations, or if we talk without paying any regard at all to what we're saying. We should be, you know, like measuring our words. Is this conversation okay? If I was hearing this as an outsider, are the words fine? Is this a topic that is helpful? Is this good to be talking about? Or have we sort of inadvertently, and it can happen inadvertently, just sort of wandered off into territory that perhaps isn't that good after all, and maybe it's not going to be acceptable in God's sight, in which case let's sort of redirect the conversation. But if we're not alert, not aware, then we'll miss all of that. So we need to be thoughtful and think first. Back to Ecclesiastes, or I should say, I guess, forward to Ecclesiastes, Psalms, Proverbs, and then Ecclesiastes, and chapter 3. Ecclesiastes, chapter 3, and just set the scene in verses 1 and 2, just so we know where we are. It's quite a well-known passage. It's appeared in a few, I think, hymns and songs over the years. 3, verse 1. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck up or harvest what is planted. And we know that there's a right time for things to take place. There are some times for, you know, harvesting, which is in the you know, the autumn. There's a time for planting, time to be born, time to die, and he lists a number of things. But dropping down to verse 7, a time to tear and a time to sow, a time to keep silence and a time to speak. And notice which one comes first, by the way. A time to keep silence while you ponder, perhaps reflect or study how to answer, or perhaps just a time to keep silence. If you can't say anything good about a person, say nothing at all. We've all heard that growing up, I guess. It used to be, I guess, a courtesy of yesteryear. If you can't say anything good about a person, okay, say nothing at all. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. And it's up to us to decide what is right. We've got wisdom from God. We've got God's Spirit, we've got His instruction book. There's many, 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 many more scriptures on speaking and using our tongues. But there'll be a time to keep silence and a time to speak. We'll be careful which we're doing when. And the wise person decides, is it time to speak now Or is it better to be silent now? Am I best to sort of just make my excuses and leave this conversation? Or is it time to speak up? And there are times for both. You and I must decide as best we can, using God's Spirit, when it's time to keep silence and when it's time to speak. But notice the silence is mentioned first. Also in Ecclesiastes, if you look across at chapter 5, and reading verses 1 and 2, is talking really here about, in those days, going to the temple. In our day, I guess, you could say coming to church, or if we ever had the chance, opportunity these days, which is very few and far between for most of us. We're pretty scattered. But I think we take the principle here. Verse 1, walk prudently when you go to the house of God, wherever that might be at the time, and draw near to hear, rather than to give the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know that they do evil. Verse 2, do not be rash with your mouth, and let not your heart utter anything hastily before God. For God is in heaven, you on earth, therefore let your words be few. So it's talking in particular about what we say to God. It would have been in the days of the temple, but I guess it could apply equally now in our time before God, in prayer and so on. We've got to think about our words when we're talking to God, as well as each other, and even to ourselves. If you talk to yourself in negative language all day long, it's no surprise if you end up being a very negative person. But here it's talking about specifically, be careful. You know, oh God, if you do this, I'll do that. Okay. Are you sure? If you say something and you don't do it, it says later on, you know, you are getting into tricky territory. It says, verse 2, don't be rash with your mouth. Don't let your heart utter anything hastily before God. And of course that applies in every situation. It's being used here specifically of talking to God and making perhaps hasty vows and things of that nature, but it applies talking to neighbors, church members, family, friends. Don't be rash with your mouth. Don't blurt out all the things you're going to do. Don't let your heart utter anything hastily. Think, in other words, think first. Think first. Study how to answer. And don't be rash with your mouth. So it's fairly common, this instruction. It crops up all over the place, really, but hopefully we're getting the point. We need to have our brains well and truly engaged before we start talking. Proverbs 13, so back towards the front of the Bible again. Proverbs chapter 13. And verses 2 and 3. Verse 2, a man shall eat well by the fruit of his mouth, but the soul of the unfaithful feeds on violence. He who guards his mouth preserves his life, but he who opens wide his lips, blah 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 blah, shall have destruction. Again, these are laws of speaking. A man shall eat well by the fruit of his mouth. If he speaks good things, positive things, then he'll have a good outcome in his life and enjoy the fruit thereof. And verse 3, he who guards his mouth, and we've seen that I'm thinking many, many times now, preserves his life. Remember, death and life and the power of the tongue. But he who opens wide his lips, just talks, you know, no thought, no control, just let rip, shall have destruction. And of course, that can happen in all manner of ways. If you're open your mouth to somebody who's, you know, 20, I'm going to say 20 stones, but 200 pounds heavier than you, and you tell them a thing or two, you might end up, you know, being taken up and beaten up, and discover afterwards it would have been wiser to have kept your counsel. But it's generally speaking that if you open your mouth and just blab out all manner of things, you can destroy. James talked about the tongue being like a little fire. Can burn in a whole forest and set on course, you know, the wheel of hell and all the rest of it. It's be careful, guard your mouth. It says in the Good News Bible, A careless talker destroys himself. Or the New Century Version, whoever speaks without thinking will be ruined. So guard our mouth. Think. Whoever speaks without thinking will be ruined. Proverbs 25. And verse 11. There's a very pleasant song by Fawn Montgomery, based around some portions of Proverbs, including this one here. Verse 11, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. A word fitly spoken. One translation says, a word skillfully spoken. Or the New Century Version says, the right word spoken at the right time is as beautiful as gold apples in a silver bowl. It's just beautiful. If we can find the right word, the fitting word, the skillful word at just the right time in its season, and we can only do that if we are watching our tongues, guarding our mouths, studying how to answer. And in our case, if we have access to the Spirit of God, and God's Spirit is poured abroad in our hearts, then we should be able to find the right words. But we have to give ourselves time. Think. Be aware. You know, you could make the converse here that, you know, bad words spoken at the wrong time, you know, is destructive. But here, a word fitly spoken. You think about it at just the right time, you say just the right thing, and it's beautiful. The right word spoken at the right time is as beautiful as gold apples in a silver bowl. And you and I should be people who can do that. Let's turn finally to Proverbs 15. Final verse for today, Proverbs 15. And the verse 23. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, how good it is. And that's probably more clear in some other translations. The New Revised Standard Version says, an apt answer is a joy to anyone, and a word in season, how good it is. Or the New Living Testament, everyone enjoys a fitting reply. It is wonderful to say the right thing at the right time. And that's obviously very true. A man has joy by the answer of his mouth. If you can find the right word to say at the right time, particularly if it's helping somebody, providing comfort, encouragement, inspiration, giving them insight or guidance, if you can find just the right word to really help somebody, then it says here, you have joy when you do that. And we all know that. I guess there's times in all of our lives when we've just been able to just find just the right phrase, the right saying, the right advice, just at the right time when it was going to help somebody. And it gives you joy. You just think, wow, that's tremendous. And of course, that's what God would want us to be doing. He's given us the gift of speaking. It's a divine gift. Animals don't have it. Fish don't have it. But human beings made in God's image and likeness do. And the scriptures are filled with really laws about how to speak. Again, it says here, verse 23, a man has joy by the answer of his mouth, and a word spoken in due season, in other words, at just the right time, how good it is. But we can't do that if we're careless with our words, if we have a habit of just speaking what we think without really thinking, of just blurting out careless, idle words, sometimes crude words, particularly negative words, depressing words, miserable words, griping words. That's not what we expect to come out of the abundant heart of somebody who's an overcomer, a coming king priest, a future ruler of the world. Our words should be very, very different. And so, you know, to bring today's Bible study to a conclusion, hopefully we've at least set the groundwork here that our words are very, very important, that God expects us to guard our tongues and to choose our words and to use the gift of speaking in a way that's very pleasing to Him. So next week we'll continue that, but today at least let's take away just the one thought, which is before we speak, think first. And with that, we'll conclude today's Bible study.